You're my sole creator. Let's change the world together tonight. With a flash of light, you made me alive. Oh, Frankenstein. Ooh.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the fifth episode of the Victor Frankenstein podcast called It's Alive. My name is Lisa.
And I'm Gina. And it's crazy that it's the fifth episode. It doesn't feel like that. It feels like we've done 10 or something.
Yeah. Maybe it's just because, you know, in our real life, it feels like we do a podcast every single day.
Right.
But yeah, so we have an interesting episode for you guys today. There has been some updates on social media for Victor Frankenstein, some that are super exciting. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. We're going to have a kind of quick review on The Bride of Frankenstein, the 1935 Frankenstein film directed by James Whale, which is the sequel to the original 1931 Frankenstein. And then the last part of it is actually going to be Gina and I talking about how we think the film Victor Frankenstein will be received from the public. Will it be a box office hit? Will it be a flop? Will it be critically acclaimed or not? So this is actually something Gina and I talk about a lot, actually, and we've talked about for the past 6 months. And, you know, we're not box office analysts or anything like that. You know, take everything that we say with a grain of salt. It's really just two sisters.
No way. I work at Fox and I'm a box office analyst.
Yeah, totally. So yeah, take everything that we say with a grain of salt and kind of, you know, understand it's just two sisters kind of having fun and analyzing. You know, for fun, of course, we've analyzed movies and box office predictions for years together. That's just something that we do for fun because we have a really strong passion for movies. And, you know, analyzing when they come out and how audiences will react to that. And yeah.
Well, yeah. And it's interesting, like, almost for as long as I can remember, ever since high school, I go to RottenTomatoes.com, I look at the review rating, and then I jump over to BoxOfficeMojo.com and I see how well the film did, how many theaters it's playing in, what the production budget was. Because usually people consider a movie a hit if it does double the production budget. But we'll get more into that later in this episode of the podcast. So.
For sure. All right. So we're going to kind of jump in here. So the very first thing that I want to talk about are there were certain social media things that I was really excited about this week. The first is that the very official Victor Frankenstein Twitter actually updates now.
I like how you said the very official.
The official Victor Frankenstein Twitter, because mine's not the official one.
Yours just the very Victor Frankenstein Twitter.
Yeah, so basically the official Victor Frankenstein Twitter updates now, which is wonderful. And they started doing
that. It's alive.
They started updating their Twitter a lot, actually, since the trailer came out, which was expected because I feel like that's when Fox officially started the promotion for the film. And there's these two things, actually, that the Twitter account updated that I'm very, or sorry, that the Twitter account posted that I'm very, very excited about. This is the kind of stuff that I don't have access to because I don't work on the film and I wish I had access to, but they're doing a wonderful job of posting this exclusive content. The very first one that I feel like I should talk about is Daniel Radcliffe. They posted this probably like 20-second video of Daniel Radcliffe explaining the journey of Igor. And it's really awesome because in the video, it kind of shows these clips of Daniel Radcliffe preparing for a photo shoot and being in a photo shoot. And then it just kind of shows him sitting on a couch just talking about Igor. So I'm really curious, like, I'm sure this photo shoot is going to be released at some point, but also, is this going to be for the DVD and Blu-ray extras? Is this ever going to be, you know, released? The full version of this interview is ever going to be released, maybe for promotion for the film. We're not sure, but it's really cool. And I really like what he said about Igor. So I'm going to read the quote.
You have to read it in a Daniel Radcliffe voice. Oh, I'm kidding.
No.
I'm kidding.
Oh, no. I play Igor Strassman. Victor sees me in the circus, which is where he finds me, spots my talents, and sort of lifts me out of this god-awful existence that I've been living for my entire life.
Whoa, spoilers.
Is it spoilers?
Spoilers.
But yeah, I really love that. Every single time that Daniel Radcliffe talks about Igor, I just know more and more that he really and truly understands the character. And yeah, I really, really love what he said about Igor here. And I really like the dynamic between Victor and Igor that Daniel has exposed in this quote.
It's really interesting. I guess we can talk about it. It's not really a spoiler. So Victor sees me in the circus, Daniel says. Huh. That's pretty cool. I don't know if you guys have noticed, but there's some circusy shots in the trailer, so kind of keep that in mind.
But we won't tell you what that means.
Exactly.
So then, the next thing that the Twitter account posted was a similar video, except it was James McAvoy this time, and that video is about 20 seconds long. And so it's the same thing. It features, you know, James McAvoy doing a photo shoot. But what's really cute is that this time around, they've decided to include a shot of James McAvoy and Daniel Radcliffe. So apparently they did a photo shoot together. And it's really cute. And it's actually beautifully shot. It's just James and Dan outside. They're kind of near a brick building. And there's a lot of sunlight in the picture.
Tote's cute.
Yeah, they're really cute. And Dan's laughing and doing his signature, "I'm cute, Daniel Radcliffe," laugh. And then James is smiling. But anyway, I love that
enough
shot.
Enough about that.
So then James McAvoy says, "Victor Frankenstein is the original mad scientist as he was conceived by Mary Shelley." And by the way, when he says Mary Shelley, it's really hot. Sorry. Side note.
In his Scottish accent.
Sorry. "As he was conceived by Mary Shelley and reconceived by Max Landis and Paul McGuigan and myself. It's quite fun. You're playing the original crazy archetype mad scientist."
What I love about that is when I read the script, I didn't really think of Victor in that way. I think we've mentioned that in previous podcast episodes. But I for some weird reason, I mean, I guess it makes sense one day if any of you guys read the script, but I thought of him playing Victor like Charles Xavier. A little bit more, I guess what's the right word? I guess charming, a little bit more proper and crisp, I guess. But ever since I saw the trailer at Comic-Con, I was like, actually, I love this. Because as we've mentioned, the whole point of this script is to take bits and pieces of the Frankenstein like mythos and what you think Frankenstein is and actually put it together in one movie. So if Max is doing that with the script and the story, why can't the actors do that with their performances? So I think James is playing Victor Frankenstein the way everyone thinks Victor Frankenstein is, but has never been played. So why not play it like the crazy mad scientist? I love that. So thank you, James.
Yeah, I love that too. It's really exciting to see how these actors bring Max Landis's world to life. Literally, oh my gosh. I didn't even mean to do that. to life.
We're probably going to say that at least 10 more times.
Oh man, I'm so sorry, guys. Like, it must be really annoying hearing us say it's alive like a million times. And we didn't even realize that's the name of our podcast. Anyway.
What is the name of our podcast?
No, I'm not going to say it. So... yeah. So something else that was really excited. Wow. I'm excited. But something else that's really exciting that happened this week is Variety posted. And if anyone doesn't know, Variety is this online news source for movies. And it's also a magazine. But Variety posted something called the Digital Audience Ratings. And I'll explain a little bit what that is. So each week, Variety publishes Listen First Digital Audience Ratings, which in parentheses, that's DAR, parentheses, which measures what entertainment content is resonating most across Facebook, Google+, Instagram, Tumblr, Twitter, YouTube, and Wikipedia combined. And I think that's really cool. I didn't know that there was even something that measured all of that.
I mean, I guess it makes sense if you think about music and the Billboard charts, like they also take into account the online presence of a song. But yeah, it's really cool to see that they do that with trailers as well.
Yeah, so sorry if I didn't make that clear. Yes, so it basically measures how popular a movie trailer is. And yeah, I think that's a really, really cool thing. I think it lets movie studios know, you know, it kind of lets them predict how popular the movie is going to be when it comes out in the box office and what they kind of need to do. Like, let's say if a trailer isn't popular, maybe they need to change their marketing strategy. Maybe they need to focus on something else. Or if a movie trailer is popular, then they're doing a good job and they're just going to continue to push the things that worked in the trailer the first time around. But anyway, so why I bring that up is The Martian and Victor Frankenstein joined fellow Fox film Deadpool on the leaderboard this week. Each trailer accumulated over 4 million views on YouTube within the first few days online, quickly snagging spots on both the overall and trending leaderboards. The Martian is a returner, with this marking its second week on the leaderboard, while Victor Frankenstein debuted. So basically what this means, guys, that's incredible. So the Victor Frankenstein trailer, at least the US version, has over 4 million views on YouTube within its first week. Like, I think that's amazing. And the fact that it's only trending behind The Martian is another huge accomplishment, because The Martian arguably has had a lot more hype and a lot more buzz since the first Martian trailer came out. So the fact that Victor Frankenstein is trending behind, only behind The Martian, I think is just incredible.
Haha, take that, Fox.
I know, Fox probably didn't think that Victor Frankenstein would resonate this much, but it has.
So, bam.
And, you know, that brings up an interesting point, whether or not Fox kind of knew that the star power of Daniel Radcliffe and James McAvoy and the name of Frankenstein alone would be the thing that would bring audiences to theaters or would bring people to rewatch the trailer.
I feel like they did, because I don't know if someone pointed it out in the lovely YouTube comments, note my sarcasm, but, you know, the trailer, at least the US one, starts with James McAvoy and Daniel Radcliffe talking, so already you can see their chemistry, so I don't know, I think they are aware of that star power. I think that's why they started the trailer like that. Does anyone even remember the last time two actors introduced a trailer on YouTube? Like, maybe that happens if you're watching like Entertainment Tonight or something, but every time someone watches that US trailer, it has to start with James McAvoy and Daniel Radcliffe. So it's interesting. It's a little interesting thing to note. Another interesting thing that I kind of want to bring up is the change of the editor.
Yes. So Gina and I, the mall that we work in Los Angeles. I was actually about to say the name of it, but that would be kind of creepy because I love you all, but I mean, I don't think anyone would come to our mall. But anyway, the mall that we work at in Los Angeles, the movie theater, it's an AMC movie theater. I will say that. That's fine. They have a Fox section, and it's basically at the very front of the movie theater. And there's one side that's a huge, huge, huge cardboard poster that's facing the windows. So if you, when you're walking towards the movie theater, you see this huge poster. But then when you walk in the movie theater, the other side of that huge poster is three more posters, but they're still really big. But Fox has had this section of this AMC movie theater for a very long time. And I have always, for the past 6 months, have always looked at that section just waiting for the Victor Frankenstein trailer. I just always have. You know, because I'm like, well, one day it'll be there.
Poster.
Wow, the Victor Frankenstein poster. Because, you know, I always knew eventually it would be there. So, excitingly enough, a few days ago, my friend, because he knows, you know, my real life friends know how obsessed Gina and I are with this movie. My friend texted me and he's like, hey, guess what's here? And he posted a selfie of him with the Victor Frankenstein poster behind him. And I freaked out when I got that text.
You were pretty much hyperventilating.
I really was. I was like, oh my God, like, this poster is going to be huge. I have to take a picture of it. I've dreamed of this day. So Gina and I, during her lunch, we went over, and when I saw that poster there, and it's huge, it's not just like a normal size poster, it's huge. It's like two of me, you know what I mean? It's huge.
We'll take a picture of it and post it on Twitter and Tumblr.
Yeah, I will, because it, it's so exciting. I literally screamed. Like, I squealed. Like, I think the person working kind of gave Gina and I a very strange look. But I am sorry that I'm not sorry, because I have dreamed of seeing that poster there.
We're pretty much acting, if anyone didn't know any better, we're pretty much acting as if, like, Dana Radcliffe and James McAvoy were actually in front of us. Like, it was right. Kind of funny.
But yeah, so we go up to this beautiful poster, and we're trying to take selfies, but it's such a long poster that it doesn't look right and all this stuff. So we take like 10 pictures of it with us and individually and all this stuff. However, I am looking through the credits, right? Because that's what I do. Because I'm like, oh, look at Craig Armstrong, the score. And that's so exciting. And he's amazing. And I can't wait to hear his score. Oh, look at... I can't say her name right. Janny. She's the costume designer, and she's amazing. And look at her name, and I'm so proud. And Max Landis, and James McAvoy, and Andrew Scott, and Danny Radcliffe. Like, so that's basically what we do. However, we looked over at the editor, and I noticed, I was like, wait a minute. That has a different name. And the reason why I know this, besides me obsessively, you know, looking at every detail of Victor Frankenstein on the IMDb page, is a few months ago, I actually wrote this editorial on why Victor Frankenstein will be successful. And recently I posted that same article on Movie Pilot, and I titled it The 5 Reasons Why Victor Frankenstein Will Succeed. And it's really cool because when I originally posted that post on Tumblr, I also posted it on Twitter, and Max Landis, actually the screenwriter, actually favorited my tweet. So I don't know if he actually read it or not, but senpai noticed me. at least a few months ago, maybe. Anyway, so the reason why I bring up this article is, in that article, I wrote why the editing of the movie is going to be so good, because Andrew Holm is an incredible editor that has worked with Paul McGuigan before on several projects. And yeah, so I was really excited because he had worked on Lucky Number 11 and Wicker Park.
And so editors and directors are supposed to get along, because honestly, after everything is filmed, after they do reshoots if necessary, and then they have to put the score in, this is like the bulk of the movie. This is the bulk of the post-production side of everything. This is whether a movie is going to have great pacing. They have to find the best takes of the actors, the best angles. Like, this honestly can make or break a film. There's been a lot of great films that have been unsuccessful because of the editing. So it's really good to have a director and editor that like each other, that have worked with each other before, and even if they haven't, that they get along really well. So we're excited because Andrew Holm, since he's worked with Paul McGuigan a few times, like, that's a great sign. That's a great sign that a studio would choose someone that's worked with a director, because they want them to have that rapport. And so we were, like, super excited. Are you kidding?
And then... we look at the Victor Frankenstein poster, and it has a different name. And we look at it, and I was like, hey, Gina, that's a different editor than the one that has been posted this entire time. And Gina's like, what? And so the new editor for Victor Frankenstein is Charlie Phillips. And the thing with Charlie Phillips, at first I was like, I don't know who that is. Like, what? This is crazy. Like Gina said, editing is so important. It can make or break a movie. And I, this whole time, had trusted Andrew Holmes so much. However, that being said, if you guys have seen the BBC's Sherlock, this man has been nominated for 2 Emmys for his editing on that show. And he's actually won 2 BAFTA awards for his editing on Sherlock. And the 2 episodes that he has edited has been the very first episode, called A Study in Pink, and then arguably some people consider this to be the best episode, but it's A Scandal in Belgravia, which is the very first episode of season 2.
Well, also, he also edited The Great Game and The Hounds of Baskerville. So literally he has edited all the episodes that Paul McGuigan has directed, So clearly, so they literally did four episodes of Sherlock together. So, and they worked out pretty well, don't you guys think? So I think that that's a really good sign, honestly. Like a two-time Emmy nominated, two-time BAFTA winning editor, and he's worked with Paul McGuigan before, and it's been successful. That's a really great sign.
Yeah, and the thing is, you guys, like, the editing in the BBC Sherlock, that's actually probably one of my favorite aspects of the TV show, if we're being completely honest here. Like, the attention to detail to all of the really important details of Sherlock's investigations, down to the brilliant way that Paul McGuigan actually came up with showing text on a screen. So, for example, if a character gets a text message on their phone, before Sherlock, normally the director and the cinematographer, they just filmed a phone receiving a text message. But Paul McGuigan is the genius that came up with, you know what, that's boring. Let's actually show text on the screen so the audience members can read the text while the character is receiving the text. But however, things like that, that's obviously done in post-production. That's obviously done by the editor. So it's so incredible to me that this award-winning, incredible editor is working on Victor Frankenstein. Like, again, this is just kind of upping this whole Sherlock team in charge of Victor Frankenstein, because obviously the cinematographer, Fabian Wagner, did the cinematography for a lot of Sherlock episodes. He did the cinematography for Victor Frankenstein. So, and obviously, you know, we don't even have to get into Andrew Scott, Louise Brealey, Mark Gatiss. They're all in Sherlock. They're all in Victor Frankenstein. Alistair Petrie, yes. He was in the third series of Sherlock. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, Gina and I are over the moon. The BBC Sherlock is our second favorite show of all time. And so to even think that that team is working on arguably my most anticipated film ever is just very exciting. And although it might be kind of a disconcerting thing that the editor just changed, it's also a very exciting thing.
Yeah, because if I were to pick any editor to work on this, it would be a BBC Sherlock editor, arguably one that has worked with Paul McGuigan. And there it is. It changed to that. So again, we're like stoked. However, let's talk about some negative things that can entail.
Well, what's interesting, and again, this is just speculation on our part. We actually don't know. But now that we know this new detail, I'm very curious about something. So a few months ago, Paul McGuigan said that he was working on the sound mix of the film Victor Frankenstein in Pinewood Studios, which is a huge movie studio in London, where they did also film some scenes.
And just in case you guys don't know, sound mixing is all the different sound levels, the different like sound effects, how loud the actors are, how that compares to how loud the score is. If they have to EQ anything, which means like add certain effects or make something have higher frequencies. I'm gonna get way too scientifical.
Scientifical. I think you made up a word.
I did make up a word. So keep that in mind. Sound mixing. Mixing sound.
So when Paul McGuigan was working on that, that was quite a few months ago, but I remember, and this was before Fox changed the release date from October to November, by the way. So at this point, I want to say it was probably May, and Victor Frankenstein was still coming out on October 2nd. So keep that in mind. When Paul McGuigan tweeted that he was working on the sound mix, I was like, really? Like, that's kind of late in the game. Like, this movie's coming out in like a few months and they're not even done working on the sound mix. Now, that is common in several movies, but it was just odd to me because this movie has been technically been done at least filming for a year.
Well, and what's even stranger is that the trailer hadn't come out yet. So the trailer hadn't come out and they weren't done with sound mixing. Like, maybe that's why the trailer hadn't come out, Question mark?
Right, because they weren't even done mixing the levels of the audio of the actors' voices and the score and stuff like that, which kind of, I remember, I'm not making this up. Gina, after Paul McGuigan tweeted that, she's like, there's no way this movie is coming out on October 2nd.
I literally said that.
And I was like, what do you mean? Like, it has to. Like, they've already pushed the release date back like 3 times. Like, there's no way they're going to do it again. And crazily enough, a few weeks later, Fox announced that they were pushing Victor Frankenstein back. But I'm just curious, now that we have this new tidbit of information, is it because of the editing? Did they not like the editing that was done on the film before, and then they changed editors, which again can definitely affect the reason why a movie would be pushed back or not? And if that's the case, that actually gives me a lot of confidence in Fox, because that means that they care deeply about this movie. Because, I mean, that's kind of crazy, right? Like, pushing a movie's release date is a very huge thing that a studio has to consider heavily. And I want to point out, actually, usually when they do that, it's a very long time. For example, The Great Gatsby, back when that movie came out, it was supposed to come out during the fall, and then they pushed it to the summer. So it was like a good like 8-month difference of when it was supposed to come out to when it did come out. And although Victor Frankenstein was supposed to come out in the fall of, 2014, and then they pushed it to October, so that was a huge jump, right?
Well, it was October 2014, then January 2015.
Right, and then they pushed it back to October of 2015. But I feel like potentially, again, this is all speculation, but potentially maybe they were like, okay, maybe we just need maybe like a month, maybe 2 months, and then it'll be ready. So what are we going to do? And then they thought, okay, well, The Martian comes out November 25th. Let's just switch them. Again, that's all speculation. As far as we know, the reason why Fox switched it, which this actually doesn't make too much sense, is because The Martian, when that trailer originally, the first trailer came out, it was such a huge hit that they wanted to make The Martian come out first, which in hindsight, that doesn't really make a lot of sense.
Well, and you know what's even more fascinating? So we mentioned this in the last podcast, but the editing of the trailer from Comic-Con to the US trailer that got released, the audio is exactly the same, but the clips are different, almost as if it has different editing, which is interesting because usually movie studios give, there's usually companies that their sole reason is to make trailers. So I'm pretty sure the editor didn't make the trailer. However, it did seem like different shots and things like that. So I don't know if they like took what Charlie Phillips, the new editor, did and then put that into the trailer. It's just interesting. It just so happens that the clips are different from the Comic-Con trailer and they changed the editor. I'm just saying. It's interesting.
Right. So yeah, so take everything, like I said, with a grain of salt. There's no credibility or validity to what we just said. We're just speculating. It's just an interesting thing to think about. Regardless, Charlie Phillips is an incredible editor that I love very much. I admire his work, and he's won awards, and I honestly could not be more thrilled that he is the new editor. I think we can expect incredible things. I think having more of a Sherlock sensibility to Victor Frankenstein is a great thing. There's nothing bad that can come out of that. I'm sorry if you don't like Sherlock, so then you'll be very sad at this news. But if you love that show, then yeah, definitely be excited. All right, so that was kind of a recap of, or not a recap, that was basically everything that happened on the social media front of the film this past week, which some of it has been really exciting. And also, hold on, really quick, happy birthday, Mary Shelley.
Happy birthday.
I think we should sing happy birthday.
Sing a little bit, yeah.
Should
yeah.
we?
Really quick.
Okay. Right.
Harmony, no?
Yeah. Yeah, let's just do it.
Okay.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Mary Shelley. Happy birthday to you. Happy like, birthday, dear Mary Shelley. Yeah. Yeah, so Mary Shelley, we would not be having this podcast without her. But come on, that's selling her short. She created science fiction.
Get it? Created.
Created. And I mean, I can't even tell you how many adaptations of Frankenstein and even that story. Like when you think about something like even like Frankenweenie, right? Like right. Tim Burton's Frankenweenie. Like,
or if you think about even Age of Ultron and Joss Whedon, who directed and wrote Age of Ultron, Avengers Age of Ultron, has said that he has taken that Frankenstein influence to Ultron. And if you guys have seen Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the best show ever, who Joss Whedon also created and wrote a lot for. In the fourth season, the main villain in that season is also influenced by Frankenstein. So even in modern times, in a completely different thing that doesn't even have the Frankenstein name associated to it, this story has been adapted and done, God, thousands of times. If you think about, if anyone has seen the movie, and I'm probably going to pronounce it incorrectly, Ex Machina, starring Oscar Isaac and Domhnall Gleeson and Alicia Vikander, and I probably pronounced all their names incorrectly. That's also a very Frankenstein-y thing. It's amazing because it's about two men building a robot. Well, one man built a robot, then the other man is almost like an experiment with how he reacts to her. But yeah, it's an amazing story, and the feminist in me, and actually forget about the feminist in me for a second, just me, I'm just so happy that a woman created that, such an important thing in history, in our culture, in pop culture, in society. The fact that she wanted to bring to light that men thought they could create life but they didn't succeed is kind of amazing. And even besides that point about it, there's just so many incredible themes and points that she's trying to make. So she's a genius, honestly, an absolute genius.
And obviously the story resonated so much that it has been adapted to film since 1910, and it is now 2015, and every year or so we get some new major adaptation of that story. So yeah, Gene, what do you think it is about the Frankenstein story that people kind of find timeless and aren't can never get sick of?
I love that question, because almost every director or actor that's been in a Frankenstein type film has commented on that. But I think it's the obvious things about life and death. But also, you know what, let me take it a step back, because I'm not going to say the obvious things. So a lot of people say they love Sherlock Holmes because it's like an adventure and we want to be like Sherlock Holmes. And in a weird way, I think Victor Frankenstein is kind of similar. I don't think we all want to be Victor Frankenstein. I don't think we all want to create a monster, but it's definitely an adventure that he's going through. And I think at some point in everyone's life, they have a dream and a goal, and they might be a little obsessed with it. They might be a little crazy about it, but they, somewhere inside of them, they want to do anything to make that happen. So it's about that longing and that obsession and wanting to also do something to potentially better the world. And no spoilers, but I think that's what I love about Max Landis's script for Victor Frankenstein, is that Victor has a reason. And this isn't really a spoiler in the UK/international trailer. Like, it starts with Victor saying all this stuff, like, I'm going to totally mess up the quotes, even though I've seen it a million times. Like, you know, what if like a crippled man can walk again? Like, I love that Victor has a good reason. Like, he does want a better society. He does want to make the world a better place than he left it. And aren't we all trying to do that in some way, especially with our dreams? So I don't know, for me, I think that's one of the big reasons I love it so much. Yeah, that's just me personally. That's my little rant. What about you, Lisa?
Wow, I love that answer, Gene. That's awesome.
Bam.
There's just this aspect also to me of, this is what I've personally always taken from it, is just because you have this dream, just because you can do something, should you? And even though at first you might think it's a great thing, is it a great thing? It kind of questions your own ambitions and your own dreams. So I love that aspect of it. You know, Victor, even in the novel, he finally does this thing that he really wants to do, and then it kind of backfires in his face because he's trying to tamper with nature. And even if you're religious or you're not, so you could say, oh, he's going against God, right? He's trying to create life, and that's God's doing. Or even just the state of nature itself. So you could say, oh, well, it's against nature to create something without reproducing with, you know, the opposite sex, right? So I just really love that. I love how that's kind of eerie. I actually do like in the book that we don't really know how Victor brings something to life. He just kind of does. But I also like how in certain other Frankenstein adaptations, they kind of go a little bit more into the how. But yeah, so ambition, dreams, obsession, I kind of think that everyone has all of those. At least I hope you do. Or if you don't right now, you will someday, I'm sure. And those are things that I think everyone can relate to. And it's kind of sad to see Victor not achieve what he wants. And yeah, I just think that Victor is a wonderful character. And I think Frankenstein the creature is horrifying.
But also really quick, before we move on from that, I also love, obviously, guys, and I'm sorry, this is a more obvious answer. I'm sorry. Usually in a lot of adaptations, you see the monster's perspective and how sad is it that he feels like, who am I? Why am I here? Do I belong somewhere? Can I find a partner? And I think that's honestly like an analogy between humans and, if you believe in God, our relationship with God, or even our relationship with our parents. And that's a very universal theme. I hope everyone can relate to being born from parents, unless you're an alien or something. Maybe aliens reproduce, who knows? Getting like scientifical again. But yeah, so I kind of love that. And again, in Victor Frankenstein, I think Igor's the monster, and I think Igor might potentially question those things. And I don't know, that's one of my favorite themes from every Frankenstein adaptation I've seen and hopefully will see. So I think those two things are two things that have to happen, is this pursuit of wanting to reach your dreams and the question of why are we here. So as long as an adaptation has both of those, then I am set. You can make it as weird as you want, you can make it completely like your own, but have those two things, please. Please.
All right. So speaking of Mary Shelley and having those few themes, we're going to move on to our quick review of The Bride of Frankenstein. It's the 1935 James Whale movie, which is the follow-up sequel to the very successful Frankenstein. Yeah, I personally loved this movie. I think they took really great things from the book, which is the monster's pursuit of having a mate or having someone like him. Something that I personally loved, talking about Mary Shelley, is she actually appears in the beginning of this film.
And I heard about that before we started watching it. So in my head, I was like, wait, that makes no sense. Like, what? So the first film is supposed to be realistic and like we act like this actually happened, and then now Mary Shelley's in it. Like, is she like someone in the town or something? Like, I was kind of upset, but then how it actually unfolded, I actually loved. And it didn't hit me also before I started watching this film was that like it almost seems like the first Frankenstein is like the first half of the book, and then the sequel is like the second half, which is fascinating. So as soon as like Mary Shelley popped up in the film and then she was explaining like, yeah, but do you want to know what happens next? I'm like, oh, this is almost as if she's just continuing the story. So that was awesome.
Right. And I think it's really interesting because we almost get like a movie within a movie in a sense, because it's just great to see Mary Shelley and Percy Shelley and Lord Byron talk on that iconic weekend, you know, that they're supposed to talk about. Oh, like, this is like a really, let's talk about what's the scariest thing that we can come up with. And even though in the movie, The Bride of Frankenstein, they've already had that conversation, it's still really cool to see them. That's almost how they were like when they had the conversation, and how she thought up Frankenstein. So yeah, it's just a really great, well done scene that starts the film. But something that I kind of want to touch on a little bit, because one of my Twitter followers brought this up to me, is so a lot of people speculated that because James Whale was gay, that there's a lot of homosexual subtext within the film. I don't think it's because James Whale's gay, though. Let me just throw that out there. I don't like that assumption that just because, you know, someone has a certain sexual orientation that they automatically put that into their art. I completely disagree with that. But I do think that it is definitely in the writing, which, you know, then James Whale just kind of brought to life, you know? Oh my gosh, literally.
To life.
I don't think it's because he's gay, but a lot of people speculate that there's this really interesting relationship between Henry Frankenstein and Dr. Pretorius. What I love about it is that there's a lot of facets to that relationship. Dr. Pretorius is an old mentor of Frankenstein's, and he taught him. And so there's almost this really interesting, almost father-son relationship there. And I think that mirrors the relationship between the scientist Frankenstein and his monster, which is really interesting. And, you know, Dr. Pretorius interrupts Henry Frankenstein's wedding night and is basically like, hey, let's continue your amazing work. I've already continued it. Let's make a woman, which I just think is really interesting.
Yeah, because he doesn't want a man competing for Henry Frankenstein's love.
Exactly. So yeah, it's a really great relationship. Dr. Pretorius is a really interesting character because you don't really know, you know, he almost becomes a mad scientist to me. I almost feel like Dr. Pretorius is a mad scientist way more than Frankenstein is at this point. Maybe Frankenstein in the original 1931 Frankenstein was more of that mad scientist archetype, but Dr. Pretorius becomes that, to me anyway. I think Frankenstein in this film kind of becomes the foil to that, kind of becomes the more realistic, you know, hey, maybe this isn't a good idea. I've already done this. This is a bad thing.
Which is kind of cool because I feel like the first one, it's Henry Frankenstein and Fritz. And then the second one, it's almost like Henry Frankenstein becomes the Fritz character. He's almost the one that's like not completely in charge. He's almost the one listening to Dr. Pretorius. So it's really, really interesting how the dynamics changed. And what I like about that, comparing it to Victor Frankenstein, is that there's these two scientists that are both intellectually equal that are trying to create something together. So what does that do to the relationship? How does that affect the story? And I don't know, I caught that right on. I'm like, huh, there's an adaptation that has two equally intelligent scientists. So I kind of love that, you know?
Yeah, I love that too. And then this, I just have to mention, sorry, it's early in the morning. This I just have to mention because I think it's one of the most beautifully done scenes of any film I've ever seen, is the scene where the monster goes into this hut. And this actually reminds me of the book as well. So they took inspiration from the book into this scene. But basically, the monster goes into this hut. There's a blind man playing a violin, and they describe him as the hermit. And honestly, it is such a beautiful scene, because since this man is blind, he can't see how monstrous the monster appears, so he just thinks of him immediately as a friend. And the monster can't speak, right? Because he's just groaning and making these inaudible, you know, sounds. Or not inaudible, but these sounds. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful scene, because it's these two lonely souls trying to find solace in each other's company. And there's this one moment where the hermit is basically thanking God that he brought someone into his life. And some people have speculated that that scene is really about two men that are married and are living together. And then villagers come in and interrupt that. And even though it's harmonious and beautiful and peaceful and loving, society does not accept two men living together. So that's when the villagers come in and disrupt that peace. And I think, I mean, maybe that might be reading into it a little too much, but I mean, the hermit and the monster's relationship, I think, is absolutely beautiful and it's very touching. And I think that's the moment where you sympathize with the monster, which I also feel like they got from the book. Because, yeah, even though the monster is terrifying in the book, there is a moment at least that you do sympathize with the monster because he just wants to fit into society. He just wants to feel like he belongs somewhere. He's the ultimate outcast. And I feel like The Bride of Frankenstein really illuminated that. I don't think that has any resemblance, however, to the monster in Victor Frankenstein. I think if you are going to sympathize with anyone in Victor Frankenstein, it's definitely not going to be the monster. Just putting that out there. So,
well, sorry, it is early. Really quickly, and maybe I'm jumping the gun a little bit, but since you mentioned that, like, well, yeah. So The Bride of Frankenstein in this film doesn't appear until like the very end. And it reminds me of Victor Frankenstein. Like the point of Bride of Frankenstein isn't, oh, let's see the second monster that we bring to life. It's the journey. And that's what I think Victor Frankenstein is as well. So keep that in mind. It's really cool to see a lot of similarities between this and Victor Frankenstein. So yeah, I absolutely love this. I love the way it was shot. Even the scene with the hermit and the monster in Bride of Frankenstein, like, it was so beautiful to look at that I even said out loud, like, wow. Literally, it was just the lighting and the camera angles, it was just beautiful. Like, talk about classic filmmaking. Like, this film and the first one is obviously going to be a classic until the end of time. I wish I hadn't waited so long in my life to watch it, but you know, it is what it is. So please watch that film again. We can't give everything away, and I can't wait to finally talk about this one day, but there are some amazing similarities between this and Victor Frankenstein. So if you want like pre-Victor Frankenstein marathons or pre-Victor Frankenstein sequels, like please watch Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein. Another thing too, I feel like this is the first film where people started associating the name Frankenstein with the monster. Cause like, there's a character called Carl that is played by the same actor who played Fritz in the first one. And he calls the monster Frankenstein. Mm-hmm. And the film is called Bride of Frankenstein because they're building a bride for the monster. So I feel like it's all their fault. They're the ones. They're the reasons why everyone thinks the monster is called Frankenstein. But whatever. They're still classics. So, yeah.
But yeah. So I loved it. I think it's a very strange movie. It has campy moments, but I adore it, and it's very dark. And obviously the bride herself, although she only appears in the last few minutes, I mean, it's iconic. Her hair, her face, I love that she still finds the monster scary. So, and then there's that incredible line of dialogue that the monster says to the bride and Dr. Pretorius, "We belong dead." That's chilling and so sad and
yeah, because he's talking about these two monsters that got created, right? Him, his bride, but he's also talking to Dr. Pretorius, almost saying like, "You belong dead too, because what you're doing isn't right." And right. I love that. So, yeah,
it's a one plus. It's a wonderful film. I absolutely loved it. I don't know if I prefer that one or the original Frankenstein. I love things about both of them, but yeah. So let's move on now to the part of the podcast that has to deal with Victor Frankenstein specifically. So, will Victor Frankenstein be a successful box office hit, or will it not be successful? There's definitely certain factors that will contribute to that. So, I guess we'll start with the easier part, which is, Yeah. So what do you think, Gina? Do you think that Victor Frankenstein will be, firstly, what? How do you think the reviews are going to be like for this film?
It's so funny, and I hope we mentioned this in another podcast, but Lisa and I have written fake Rotten Tomatoes summaries that we wish it will be. It's interesting because I could say this film will either have really bad reviews or really good reviews, and there's no in between, but I think that's fake. I honestly think it will also have, could potentially also have mixed reviews as well. So that's interesting. But before I get into that, I kind of want to read our fake Rotten Tomatoes summary reviews. Take it away, Lisa.
All right. So again, Jean and I obsessively check Rotten Tomatoes and read all of the summaries for all of, you know, the movies that come out. So this is my mock Rotten Tomato reviews for Victor Frankenstein.
I love this.
So at first, this is my dream Rotten Tomato summary, okay? So the percentage would be, let me dream, okay? Like 90. That's the dream, okay? And then this would be the summary. All right. So thought-provoking, beautifully shot, thrilling and fun, Victor Frankenstein combines wonderful performances, exciting action set pieces with inspired direction, and a truly original script by Max Landis.
Dream away.
I know. Sorry. Yeah. So that's my dream. Another shorter version of that is powerful performances, inspired direction that makes the most out of Landis's truly original script.
So that's probably a little lower, maybe 87 to 89%.
Right. So then this is the negative Rotten Tomato summary. So this is probably like what, like 60 or something?
Or lower.
Yeah. This is like the really bad one, right? Muddled with an inconsistent tone and an unnecessary need to add action to a horror tale, Victor Frankenstein is less than the sum of its parts.
Lisa, you can make a career out of that
by making Rotten Tomato summaries. And if you guys don't know, Rotten Tomatoes is a website that lists a whole bunch of different movie reviews and then gives a percentage. So for example, let's say there's 100, for the sake of simplicity, there's 100 movie reviews. So if half of them are negative and half of them are positive, then the percentage would be 50%. And anything under 60% is considered rotten, and anything over 60% is considered fresh. So, and you know, so when we're talking about percentages a minute ago, that's what we were referring to. So in my dream world, Victor Frankenstein would have between, I would say the lowest that I would want for it is a 75%. But my dream percentage would be, I think, realistically speaking, probably an 88% if it's really positive.
At least you're going a little high there.
I'm saying that's my dream, okay?
Oh, okay. That's a dream. So what do I think it will get? What do I think? What kind of reviews? It depends. I hope the next U.S. trailer is a little bit more intellectual. If it is, then I think hopefully reviewers will take it a little bit more seriously. At the same time, it's kind of nice to have a more action-y comedy kind of trailer, because I think that will surprise reviewers and hopefully have them give it a higher rating than they're originally going to. What I hope is that it is in the high 70 range. That's what I think. The absolute lowest I hope it'll get is a 60, as long as it's fresh. You know, I think people will give movies a chance if it has. I know that sounds crazy, but honestly, a lot of people do take stake in what Rotten Tomatoes reviews are. So as long as it's fresh, I say the lowest for me is 60. Realistically speaking, I think the highest is an 80%, because let's be honest, guys, like, people don't take remakes and reboots seriously, especially like a Frankenstein film. Like, when's the last Frankenstein film that got really good reviews? I can't even think of it. So yeah, between 60 to 80% is my guess.
Wow, Jean, that's pretty low, actually. I think if the movie is even close to the masterpiece that Max Landis's screenplay is, again, the version and draft of the screenplay that Gina and I read is not the shooting script that they used for the film. But I think if the movie is anywhere near how masterful that screenplay is, mixed with Paul McGuigan's incredible direction and the amazing performances, I mean, I think critics can take this movie seriously. I think the audiences will respond very positively to it as long as there are, you know, great performances and a good story. And I think that this film definitely has that.
I mean, I think the only thing that would hurt that, though, which shouldn't matter, but really think about the psychology of reviewers and things like that, is it is coming out around Oscar season. And what Oscar season is a lot of the studios release their films in the fall of every year because they think that will improve its Oscar chances, which means the people that vote for the Academy Awards, they know that around the fall, that's when all the quote-unquote good movies come out. So it is going to be around the time a lot of Oscar-worthy, I know that sounds so ridiculous that I'm saying that, but a lot of Oscar-worthy films are coming out. So it's interesting because it's going to be compared to them. Now, should it be compared to them? Yes, because I think the source material is so good. Should it be compared to them? No, because it's completely different than your regular Oscar drama. But it shall be interesting. Again, I think reviewers have a hard time when it comes to reboots and remakes to look past that fact. So we'll see. It's going to be really interesting. Is it going to be a cult hit or is it going to be a box office smash? Let's kind of go into that really quick. I don't know how much the production budget is. I'm going to take a guess and say at least $80 million at least.
Whoa, that's a lot.
I know that's a lot. Between 60 to 80. I know I keep saying those numbers because that's my Rotten Tomatoes percentage, but around 60 to 80, right? So nowadays, a smash hit is like double that. So right, that's a lot. Let's say $120 million. But we're talking about over the course of how long the movie's going to be in theaters. So I definitely think it's at least going to make that $120 million. What about the first weekend? Domestically, which means in the U.S., I hope it at least makes $40 million.
Okay, well, let's talk about the competition that Victor Frankenstein has that weekend, because I think that's definitely something we need to touch on before we can even predict how much it's going to make. So let's talk about the negative aspect of this movie coming out on November 25th in the U.S. So there are a few movies coming out that day. And the thing is, I actually made a post on Tumblr a few months ago talking about when Fox moved the release date of The Martian and Victor Frankenstein, a lot of people were really mad, including myself. Honestly, at first, I was really upset. I remember being in my screenwriting class at UCLA and Gina texted me the news and I was shocked. And Gina posted this post on my Tumblr and it was very negative. You know what I mean? We were both really upset at first, but then I took a step back and I actually thought about it and I was like, well, let's actually think about this for a second. So, November 25th, let's talk about why that's a bad thing, and then we'll talk about why it's a good thing it's coming out. But let's first kind of distinguish what movies are being released that week. This is actually a new film that was added, unfortunately, a few weeks ago, which is very unfortunate because I think this is going to take a lot of attention away from Victor Frankenstein, is this movie called Creed, and it stars Michael B. Jordan. And it is essentially a follow-up to the Rocky movies, which is actually going to be very, very popular, in my opinion. If it's good, though. But let's assume that it is good, and everyone loves, you know, a good action movie, and everyone loves the Rocky movies. I mean, they're iconic, and it's kind of crazy because this movie was not going to come out on Thanksgiving, and that was something that was just recently added, and it's slightly concerning in terms of competition for Victor Frankenstein because, obviously, Sylvester Stallone is in it, and, you know, the Rocky movies are incredibly popular and well done, and then this is a follow-up to it. And, you know, kind of judging recently from certain movies that have gotten either sequels or remakes or anything like that, obviously Jurassic World comes to mind, where that was very successful. I know that's a little different because, you know, who doesn't love dinosaurs, especially in this CGI world? I personally don't, but, you know, that was really successful. But then we look at something like Terminator Genesis, and that wasn't successful. So I really do think this film, Creed, is going to make a lot of money, but how much money it ends up making in the long run really will have to deal with how it's reviewed critically, how fans of the Rocky series feel about a continuation of it after all of this time. And then if the performances are good, I think the performances are going to be good. I think Michael B. Jordan is a fantastic actor. But let's see. But regardless, I think that definitely adds kind of a stiff competition to Victor Frankenstein.
Yeah, because it's a sports drama. So I feel like some families would love to see that on Thanksgiving. I don't think we know what it's rated yet. So that might be an interesting factor, because if it's rated R, potentially that might turn off some families.
I doubt it's rated R, though. It doesn't seem like it, but... So, yeah, that was an interesting thing that we found out recently, that Creed is coming out that day. In my original Tumblr post, I did not put Creed as a potential distractor from Victor Frankenstein, because it wasn't supposed to come out on Thanksgiving, and now it is, so that's really interesting. Something else that we definitely need to talk about is The Good Dinosaur. That is a Disney film, and the trailer looks adorable, and... For all of you international listeners, you guys are awesome. But Thanksgiving is definitely a time where families come together after Thanksgiving dinner, and almost everyone goes to the movies. That's just a Thanksgiving tradition. Even if, you know, you have a big dinner or not, that's just definitely a day and a weekend that people go to the movies.
Because usually parents have the day off from work, and kids don't have school. And that's just, you know, traditionally speaking, like, I don't go to college anymore because I've already graduated and I have a job and my family's all the way across the country. So I think I have that day off. So, you know, that doesn't apply to everyone. But traditionally speaking, usually families go to the movies in that weekend. So, of course, a huge one will be The Good Dinosaur. In fact, I almost think that's going to do the best that weekend when it comes to the box office numbers. Hello, Disney. Disney always does the best, but especially it's Thanksgiving, and especially that movie, so interesting.
All right, so The Good Dinosaur is going to be number one indefinitely that weekend, at least in our predictions. And then there's this movie called The Night Before, which has, I'm going to say his name wrong for some reason, Seth Rogen. I was going to say Rogen. Seth Rogen, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and Anthony Mackie. It is definitely a Christmas-type comedy, and the trailer looks really funny. The only thing detracting from it is I believe it is rated R, and it is a Christmas film, which people might not be in the mood for during Thanksgiving, but also, that being said, it is the start of the holiday season in America, so people could be in the mood to see a Christmas movie, and it's with your family. I feel like that movie will attract a lot of older audiences, not necessarily kids, obviously. So anyone, you know, like any young couple or, you know, an older couple that wants to see a comedy that day will definitely go see that. And I mean, the cast is wonderful. I think another thing that will see if it'll make a lot of money or not is if the reviews, you know, like Gina said, I think a lot of people depend on reviews nowadays, especially since the economy isn't necessarily that great in America right now. So, and movies are really expensive. So I really do think The Night Before will do well, but I do think it depends on the critics.
And so to follow that up, the other two films that aren't coming on Thanksgiving but are coming out that Friday are two Oscar-ish films. The Danish Girl, starring Eddie Redmayne and Ben Whishaw, and I Saw the Light, starring Tom Hiddleston and Elizabeth Olsen. So those two films are probably going to have a limited release, which means that they probably might only be released in New York and LA that weekend. However, that is going to take away some sales from Victor Frankenstein, I think, because any Eddie Redmayne or Ben Whishaw fans or Tom Hiddleston fans are going to see those films that Friday. Not to mention, The Hunger Games, the last one, comes out the Friday before. So anyone that was trying to avoid those crazy crowds are going to see it that weekend. And that could potentially also be a family film.
Yes. Unfortunately, this weekend is packed, you guys. It really is. I mean, The Hunger Games is just a huge, huge money-making franchise. It's huge. So I think, you know, all these Hunger Games movies have set records of box office numbers. So the last one, I feel like, is going to be the most successful box office-wise of the entire franchise. So that does not bode well for the movies that are coming out next week. I know that we said that...
The next week after.
Right. And I know that we said that The Good Dinosaur could be number one, but honestly, Hunger Games could also be number one, and then Good Dinosaur could be number two. So that being said, we're looking at the highest that Victor Frankenstein will be in the box office numbers is number three. That is the highest. That is if more people see it than Creed. That is if more people see it than The Night Before.
So who is going to see Victor Frankenstein? I personally think, hopefully, teenagers that don't want to see an animated film. And hey, I love animated films, so you best believe I'm going to see that movie that day as well. But some teenagers that might not want to see that, some teenagers that have already seen The Hunger Games.
Yeah, because I feel like a lot of people, if you really want to see Hunger Games, you're going to see it when it comes out. Or if not the night before, you know, the midnight showings or the day of, you're going to see it that first weekend if you really, really want to see it. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, a lot of people aren't going to see it on the Thanksgiving week. Of course they are, but...
We're just saying. Also, besides teenagers, I think people in their 20s, early 20s to late 20s, the whole 20s, that includes myself. I definitely think 30s and above will also see it. You also have to take into consideration, and these are my fandoms, guys, so much love to all of you, the Harry Potter fans, the X-Men fans, and the Sherlock fans. I definitely think those fandoms are amazing and strong and the best people ever. So I hopefully think some of those people will come out and support Victor Frankenstein as opposed to other films. So I don't know. I definitely think those are strong fandoms.
Yeah, I mean, we're all very passionate, obviously. I think one of the best things about the Victor Frankenstein fandom is how...
VF fandom, hashtag.
Yeah, VF fandom. I think Jinxies, or Jinxes, however you say that Tumblr user's name, she came up with that, the VF fandom. We're very passionate. We have been very excited for this movie for 6 months. I think now the hype of what we're feeling is starting to, you know, be seen in the trailer and the fact that it was trending, right? So, yeah, I think we're very passionate. And I think if we see the movie and it's great, I think word of mouth is going to be very important for Victor Frankenstein, because there's going to be some people that are very skeptical about it. Some people are going to think, oh, I don't want to see that action CGI movie. Some people are going to think, oh, it's like supposed to be funny and this is supposed to be a scary movie. And, you know, some people are going to be confused about the film. But I think if it's as great as I think it can be, I think word of mouth is going to spread. I think that Victor Frankenstein will do well in the first weekend and the second and the third weekend. I think it's going to be hopefully one of those movies that doesn't just do well the first weekend, but continues that success at least until Star Wars comes out. So all of that being taken into account, we also have to think about, because there are a lot of families that have that Thanksgiving week and weekend off, that they also might not only see one movie, but two or three movies that weekend. So taking that into consideration, so let's say on Thanksgiving night, a lot of families do go see Hunger Games, or a lot of families do go see The Good Dinosaur. I feel like if once they see those movies, they're going to think, you know what? I want to see Daniel Radcliffe and James McAvoy in a movie. Let's go see Victor Frankenstein. You know, I think there's a lot of potential for that, that even though a lot of people might not see it on opening night, they might want to see Victor Frankenstein that weekend, possibly. So I think we're in luck in terms of that's a huge weak trajectory for that film. In other words, most movies box office numbers, they start on Friday and end on Sunday, but for Victor Frankenstein it's on Wednesday until Sunday. So we have 5 days, right? We have 5 days instead of three to accumulate box office numbers. So
all of that saying, what is considered a good opening weekend number? I would say anything above, honestly, 25 million.
Right.
So, and we're just talking about the U.S. numbers. So I think U.S. numbers speaking, I personally think it'll do around the lowest, hopefully, is 40 million. Hopefully. Because we have 5 days to consider.
Yeah, I mean, that's not that bad of a number. And honestly, let's just assume the movie's budget was 60 million. Making 40 million just in the U.S. alone on that opening week, I mean, that's pretty successful when you think about it, right? I mean, that's not a high number when you think of something like Avengers Age of Ultron or something like that. But for a movie that, even though Frankenstein is technically a brand name, right, because it's a popular story and the story's been around forever and all of this stuff, it's still not a franchise in the sense of Marvel movies. So $40 million for a movie that hasn't had as much promotion as some other movies, I mean, just in the U.S., that means they almost made their entire budget back. And then, of course, we have different countries that are going to have the release dates after November 25th.
Yeah. Another big one is the UK, obviously, and that comes out December 4th. So that's why we have a feeling potentially in Victor Frankenstein's second weekend, it might be number one, maybe number two, maybe. Depends on how strong The Hunger Games is still going. But yeah, other countries that it comes out on November 25th is Canada, France, Philippines, Australia, Netherlands, Portugal, and Singapore. And then December 4th is Austria, United Kingdom, Ireland, and Sweden. And then, interestingly enough, IMDb has Germany as April 21st, 2016, which makes absolutely no sense because I feel like the Blu-ray might be out by then. But that's a whole other story. So yeah, it shall be very interesting. So that's our predictions between 60% to, what was yours?
88% on Rotten Tomatoes.
On Rotten Tomatoes, and then hopefully 40 million domestically, and then internationally, usually films do better than in the U.S. That's actually
This kind of movie.
That's actually what film studios bank on. They always think, which is unfortunate, I guess, but like, forget about the U.S. Like, what films are going to be successful internationally? Because all they care about is money. So I definitely think if it makes 40 million in the U.S., what will it make also internationally? Maybe double that? Maybe that's a little too much, but it's interesting to think about. So
I think by the end of its run, hopefully it'll make even more than $100 million at the end of its run. And I mean, honestly, I really think it's capable of doing that. So in that sense, it might not be a smash hit, but it'll definitely be a success. And that's really the important part here. I also think if it does well beyond Fox's expectations, that a sequel is definitely can be considered for this film. I mean, I really do think in the same sense that James Whale made an original Frankenstein and then a sequel to Frankenstein, that there is franchise possibility for Victor Frankenstein. Of course, I would want Max Landis to write the sequel, and if anybody else wrote the sequel, then I wouldn't watch it. But if this film is successful, if it does well enough, if it exceeds all expectations, which I really hope that it does critically and box office wise, then there will be a sequel. That being said, really quick, Jean, this will be the last question in the podcast. Will it be a cult hit or will it be a mainstream film?
It's really interesting because, again, I could say, oh, it's going to be either or, but it really could be in the middle. It will be a cult hit if, this is just one scenario, if the reviews aren't that great, so not a lot of people go see it, but then word of mouth by the time the Blu-ray and DVD gets released amps it up, kind of like Fight Club, which I know is a really weird comparison, and then it might be a cult classic in that way. Or let's say the reviews aren't that great, but people still go see it because of a million reasons, and then it is a smash hit. Or the reviews are great and no one sees it, or the reviews are great and everyone sees it. So my personal prediction is I hope, I have a feeling, especially with how popular the YouTube video or the trailer was, and please everyone keep rewatching the trailer so it keeps it up. I personally think it won't be a smash hit, but I think it'll be successful. What about you, Lisa?
Yeah, I have to agree with that. Cult hit is if, like Gina said, hardly anyone sees it, but the people that do see it love it, like really, really love it. I hope that it's almost in the middle between a cult hit and a smash hit, which can be unfortunate because then it could almost be forgotten in that way. But all right, so one last thing, and I'm not going to say who, but we have talked to some people that have seen this movie. And honestly, every single review we've heard has been incredible. There's this one person that saw it that we met that said after the movie, people couldn't stop talking about it, but in a good way. Like everyone seemed excited and happy. And there's this other person that I won't say who it is. They saw it and they said the performances were incredible and the costumes were great and the story's great and there's nothing wrong with it. It has a really great pace and it's just a great movie. So,
and again, guys, there is, I don't know if we've mentioned this, I think we have, in LA in January, there was a pre-screening where it's not edited completely and the score isn't all the way there, but you get to see a film and then afterwards you write comments about it, about what worked, what didn't work, who's your favorite actor, who didn't you like, blah blah blah. And so this is also where we're getting these comments from, so we're not just like making that up. Like there was a pre-screening of it in January, which I wish we knew about because obviously we would have been there, but we weren't. So we've also talked to another person that went to that and they also loved it, so, and they also loved the performances. So yeah, keep that in mind. That's actually exciting. Everyone that's seen it has loved it. We haven't heard a single bad review yet. Now, we haven't heard too many reviews yet, but that's still a pretty good sign. They could have easily said, it was okay, or it was bad. No, they all said it was really good.
All right, so thank you so much for listening, and we will continue to watch different Frankenstein adaptations and comparing that to Max Landis's screenplay. So yeah, I hope you guys like the intro and outro song. We will definitely shoot a music video for that song soon. And yeah, thank you so much for reaching out to us on Twitter and Tumblr. Doing this podcast is a lot of fun, and I hope you guys have fun listening to it. Don't forget to, if you like the podcast, to review and rate us on iTunes, because that would be great to see if you guys like what we're talking about and we can see what's working and what's not. And yeah.
And yeah, and again, just in case anyone doesn't know, please follow Igor Stein Turpin on Tumblr and Igor Stein Turpin on Twitter. And again, thanks so much for liking the song and commenting on it. And please ask us any questions you want, or tweet us anything or anything like that, and we'll include it in the podcast if you so wish.
And we definitely won't spoil anything, but you know, we can answer a few questions here and there that don't spoil anything. But thank you so much for listening, you guys. Until next time.
We shall see you next time.
And now, you're my great savior. Now, you're my soul creator. Let's change the world together tonight.